Start podcast, and we are on air. And just to get us off, here's a wee tune. This is a DS-106 Goodspell, futzing splendidly since 2013 on the DS-106 Radio for Life. We'll be talking about one of 106 bullet points from a blog post 106 published by the DS-106 Shrink at 106am on Tumblr at the end of the headless 13 run of DS-106. Our hashtag, 106spell. This could be gospel radio for the DS-106 generation. Mantras and koans that explore the open online course Digital Storytelling 106. We'll be meditating and rambling about education, openness, open education, art, fun and learning. I'm John Johnson, and with me as usual is Mariana Finnis. Good evening, Mariana.
Hello, good evening. Can you hear me okay? I'm just sending a thing to saying, asking people, can you hear us? Just in case.
Yeah.
Not that I'm thinking we ever do any futzing at all, but just in case.
we have infected Viv's ears with an earworm.
So they are here. Oh, they can hear. Oh,
yeah.
No.
Hopefully they heard me talking over the top of a rather nonsensical piece of music there.
Oh no, such intermissional music on the S106 radio. I tell you, that's been so funny. We should probably explain for people who may listen to the archive and haven't been participating on Twitter.
How to explain? Somebody posted a really lovely site, I think it was yourself the other day, Maria.
It was me, yes.
And the URL for that is, can you remember?
We can put it on the show notes.
But it was basically that the idea was that every video, it's called the Walk of Life Project, and it's at www.wlproject.com, that every movie ending is better with the Walk of Life by Dire Straits. And this guy has gone to a great deal of trouble to get the ends of different movies and edit them so that the Dire Straits song is playing in very good time with the ends, so that they fit. And he's got all sorts of movies on there.
Then there is the S106.
Yeah, so... fantastic thing. And at some point, David Kernahan said... it's not the music maybe he would play, and you asked him what it was, and that's what it was. It was intermission from the end, I think, of the Monty Python's.
The Monty Python thing, isn't it?
Anyway, so that seemed like a challenge, or the possibility of playing around a wee bit, and what I did was download the movie, and respecting the film's copyright, of course, ripped an MP3 out of it and set up a wee web page that will play any movie, really, but I've linked a few endings from YouTube of different movies, but with the Monty Python tune playing over the background, which kind of removes all sense of seriousness and anything at all from the site. And it is at I think intermission.surge.sh. And we'll stick that in the show notes too. And just by the way, if anybody's doing silly things on the internet that makes they want to make a web page really fast, Intermission is a fantastic service. It seems to be pretty much free, and it hosts any kind of static web content. Really good site. I think Alan Cogdog had blogged about it in the past, and I've used it once or twice now. But it basically allows you to build sort of internet stuff and then post it to their site from the command line with one command, surge, and it just goes up there. Very nice.
Well, you better write a blog post on that.
Probably should.
Anyway, but even whilst, you know, we get the blog post, people can at least go and visit and have fun with it.
Yeah. And I think
I've been laughing all day.
It's not DS-106 except everybody's involved, and it isn't DS-106, and it's the kind of thing that happens in DS-106. But tonight, Mariana, we're getting into slightly more serious territory, I think, having just been reading your show notes and gulping slightly at the intellectual heights I may have to climb soon. But the bullet point is nice and short. That's to Google or not to Google. In that area of delight and discomfort too. So
reminding that the delight and discomfort too refers to the quote by Charlie Brooker about Black Mirror, talking about this idea that Black Mirror is in that area between delight and discomfort, that on the one hand we love technology, on the other hand it perhaps has some consequences that we don't want to think about. So that's what that refers to. And my sense of this really is that often, still I would say, not just when I was doing my first run of the S106, I often wonder, from a creativity point of view and from a, you know, getting good ideas point of view, whether it is best to, you know, when you have a prompt or when you want to, you know, like a daily create or something, you know, best to go Googling and looking for ideas, or, you know, sit in silence and just allow your mind to wander and allow ideas to emerge and maybe later go and explore. So that, I think, is what that's referring to, really thinking about the impact that sometimes what I see as an over-reliance on Google offering up things may somehow hinder people's ability to generate their own ideas. So that's the basic notion of that bullet, I think.
So maybe one thing to think about is that at the point after you've had the good idea, then Googling is really handy, because you want to do something with a piece of software usually. Or it could be with a pencil, and you don't know how to do it. So Google becomes useful, not necessarily to get the idea, but to help you realise your idea. You know, so usually I would have thought ideas come from a strange place. you know, that like things come together. I mean, well, that thing I was playing with yesterday, it came from a few sort of a link, a good idea twisted into a bad idea through a few different people, and I just thought, well, this is something I can play with. But once I had that idea, then I needed to crank up Google, because among other things, the YouTube API has changed considerably since I last Googled it, and that's how I find out how to do stuff. But the idea was there, it came from yourself and David, and so I wasn't Googling for an idea, but you're Googling for technique, and that's maybe when it's useful, I think, in a DS-106 context.
I guess that's the thing, isn't it? What is the purpose, and at what point in the creative process one chooses to use it? And thus, you know, and are you then, I suppose, allowing the space to have the ideas, then think about how you know, how you use something like Google to help you. But of course, the point that you're bringing out is this idea that, you know, these days really using Google in the kind of way that you describe is something that, if you don't know how to do, you really are at a great disadvantage. Because, you know, like you describe, you know, there is so much that we can find, and so much that you, and it was interesting, you said, you know, looking for something to do with, you know, say how software works or something like that, or even a pen, because I have found it hugely helpful with, you know, that I'm taking a drawing class with, you know, pen and paper type. And I find, and people do little tutorials for how to do anything. on, you know, even with the pen, you know, so, you know, a lot of the kind of how to do an ellipse, you know, and exercises to learn how to do an ellipse properly, how you move your hand in order to, and, you know, all of this, there are loads and loads of little things that, which is similar to you saying, okay, I want to do this thing, but I don't know how, let me go and find. But, you know, firstly, in the S106, we kind of learn how to do that well, which I think is, you know, whatever else we learn, I think that is a wonderful thing. But then also, I am always quite amazed at how outside of this little world, people don't have any idea that this is something that one can do. And I think, you know, they are at a great disadvantage because it is quite a wonderful thing. The people from University College London have just released a site, it's a new site. They've been doing the research a long time. Your friend Ian, I think, started to post about it, but you know, they've been doing the research for a long time. It's called Why We Post. Have you come across it?
No, did I? I can't remember it. I don't know if I've...
And CC'd you, I can't remember. Anyway, they for a long time, they were doing the research and they didn't really have anything except their blog. But now it's been populated and they've got some of the results of the research. And it's quite nice the way they've set it up. There is a point that connects to what we're talking about as soon as I frame this. They've set it up as a kind of, you know, social media discoveries. Things that maybe go against what you might think is the norm, as it were. You know, you might think social media is bad for this, that, and they've created, I think they call them discoveries. And they have like a little video for each thing, which is the research findings. And one of them is, and this is the link back, one of them is for some people, social media is not, that's not, you know, it's not an obstacle to education. It is education. And they have some lovely, lovely videos of different countries because they looked globally. They're looking at the kind of cross-cultural nature of how people use social media. Some lovely videos about people like in Brazil, in China, in India, you know, in countries that maybe have less than we do.
Yeah.
Where they are using YouTube and things like that to learn, and it's the only thing they use because they have access to nothing else. And it was really quite an inspiring thing. From, you know, like we were saying earlier, something sometimes, you know, we look at the kind of dystopian side of things, but this is, I thought, quite an inspiring thing to watch people say, you know. So there's an example, just a simple example. One of the videos is a hairdresser in Brazil, I believe, and he young, I guess he must have done his basic training and set up doing his thing, and he was describing how he follows all of this kind of famous hairdressers that, you know, he admires, etc., how they post tutorials and how he learns. And he lists all of the things that he's learned and the different cuts and the different things that he now can do in his salon that he couldn't do before. And he's learned it all on YouTube.
Would you trust that man with your hair? Yeah.
You know what? I just think it's such a wonderful. Sometimes the example, particularly in our kind of educational technology world, we have such complicated examples. You know, examples that everyday normal people can't understand when we talk about connected learning and participatory this and, you know, whatever a jargon we want to use. But that is such a clear, simple, everyday example. I loved it. I thought it was, and there are several. I haven't looked at everything, but it is called, as I say, Why We Post.
Yeah. So I think that was Ian in Sheffield, Ian Fields, that posted that on Twitter. And he is a sometime listener here, and currently doing a PhD, I think, in sort of social media and teacher learning and stuff.
Ah, that's why because he's been tweeting about it for most of the week, because he's clearly looking at the detail of it and everything.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite a complicated. His blog and things are quite complicated for simple folk. There's a few people on Twitter might mention different things they've learned, and that David's mentioned is music and stuff. People learn, well, I think people learn guitar chords, and David Senny learns piano, I think, keyboards, from watching. And I think that young people these days, as they say, it's the first sort of place they go to find out something is YouTube. Whereas you and I would maybe go to Google, actually go to YouTube. I guess that I don't know if you're thinking of that the only thing about Google is the fact that it's becoming this huge monolith, and its intentions for us may not be wholly good, you know, because this idea that they're selling us as opposed to
well, and they've got the paid threat now, don't they? Sort of paid YouTube as well, which, you know, then might mean issues with access for, you know, like all the sort of best bits might become not accessible to the, you know, people who maybe haven't got the means to pay for it. But some of the, so, you know, to Google or not to Google, I think maybe a better question is when to Google.
In the
context of the creative process, you know, perhaps not straight away, just to you know, to get any idea, but maybe to, you know, to take some time to generate your own, and then find, you know, the how to. Maybe that's what we're heading towards.
So in the notes as well, you've got this bit by Alice van der Klee, is it? K-L-I-E? That I thought was really interesting, about scissor readers and scissor man. Do you want to talk a wee bit about that?
Well, it was in connection with the other side of the question, which is how, you know, maybe we are becoming too reliant on, you know, effectively not ever holding anything in our memory, but, you know, storing everything in, you know, pocket, pinboard, anywhere, wherever we decide to store it. And when I read, this was a paper that I was reading about something else, because it's about, something else. And I was reading about the idea of, you know, this woman calls, you know, she's talking more generally about hypertext and what it's, you know, what it may be doing to us cognitively. And she describes it as we are becoming scissor readers. Apparently there is some French person called Antoine Compagnon, who I don't know, who's used this terminology in relation to the idea of actually, you know, physically, because it's an old book, it's an old reference, physically snipping out essential bits of information, you know, from book magazines, you know, the people like newspaper cuttings and things. My granddad used to do that, you know, and we've got lots of books with lots of newspaper cuttings, you know, pinned to different pages and things. And she refers to this idea of, you know, scissor readers, and that in fact, you know, now we do it electronically. But that really what we're doing all the time is, you know, it's like cutting out things, putting them in a notebook, virtual or not. And the question, of course, is, do we, you know, are we just becoming scissor readers, pinpointing and cutting out one link after another, seeking, finding, clicking and storing each clipping on the basis of, you know, single words or concepts, which is, of course, you know, again, we would say to people, you need to learn about categories. You need to learn about, you know, how you tag things, how you organize things, etc. But I guess the implication is we learn how to do that, and then do we maybe not remember anything? And do we ever go back to the stuff that we organize so beautifully? So that's the question.
Yeah, I mean, I think that these are really interesting questions, and A couple of things spring to mind. One is, when I saw that, I quickly looked at my Pinboard bookmarks just to see how many bookmarks I had, and I seem to have about 7,000, which I don't know, I can't tell if that's a lot or not, because I don't...
You want me to see a look at mine?
Yeah, but what I thought about that was that I don't necessarily go back and look at these things very often.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember, and this is an advertising slogan for a paper notebook.
Yeah.
Called Field Notes, which I think are sort of hipster, popular, you know, even newer than Moleskine type notebooks. But the idea there was that somebody said, you know, you write all these ideas down in your notebook and you never look back at it. And they said, well, I'm not writing them for the future, I'm writing them for now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like linking to something quickly, tagging it, and usually I suppose reviewing it, because I kind of review them. I try to do it once a week, mostly to remove things that have been automatically added by Twitter or something. But that gets into your memory, and I don't necessarily go back to look for, say, if I was looking for a link for something or other, say a recipe for mushrooms or something, I don't necessarily go back to Pinboard to find it. I just remember it because I bookmarked it, and that
now,
means I can Google
raising,
it.
Yeah, what you're raising there, which is something that, you know, when you know, we teach people the study skills, yeah, how to learn. One of the things that you say to people, you know, forgetting about the sort of digital side, you say you've got to engage with your material. Part of that is you annotate. Part of that is you make your own notes. Part of that is that you find somebody else and you talk about what it is that you've read. Because if you don't do that, you're never going to learn anything.
Mm.
But what you're saying is actually what the tagging, having the electronic board and knowing where to store your that in a way acts as a way of engaging with your material, and that it then means you remember where it is.
Yeah,
that's what you're saying.
You remember what it is. It helps remember what it is. And the other thing that came to me just as you were talking through this Scissors Man thing is that what that seems to be suggesting, the problem with that is that it takes it out of a narrative. So it takes information out of a narrative because you've cut it up into chunks and pulled it out.
Mm-hmm.
And is that maybe a bad thing? Is the narrative maybe there because we are so, or have been for the last, ever since Gutenberg, hooked to the book?
Mm.
And maybe, you know, having wee bits of knowledge, maybe sort of linear narrative is not the be-all and end-all. I don't know enough about it, but I wonder if traditional storytelling maybe wasn't so linear.
I guess this is now that we now speak to the idea of, you know, in storing and thinking about things this way, are we creating something that is certainly something that is different, whether it is something that will progress our thinking or regress our thinking? I guess it's still an open question. I mean, you know, I wouldn't even begin to, you know, to try to answer that as a question. But, you know, I guess, yes, definitely, it means that we can create non-linear connections across things. Does it mean that in doing that, we start to learn how to do that to the exclusion of the other, i.e., how many articles have you read over the last, you know, X months about people who say, I can't read anymore?
Mm.
And that, I think, you know, I actually have had to retrain myself to create space to be. In fact, I think Doug sent through something about that this morning, Belshaw, because he's been reading, you know, some book or other, talking about, you know, how do you then retrain yourself to read, because people are so used to breaking everything down, making, you know, putting this here, moving it there, turn it into this is my thing that I want to say, and then they are no longer able to just focus and follow a flow of something. So there are big questions, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if it's just a worry because it's a change, and will people who come after us look at, you know, our sort of time? Oh, I don't know. I mean,
Now, as we're talking about saying that, you're saying the people that come after us, it's connecting for me with a book. I am not going to remember the name of. So there we go. Look at my pinboard.
Yeah.
The Rise of the Image, the Fall of the Word. I read that book over the holidays a little while ago, and the implication in that book is that film will basically be the thing that takes, the medium that takes over from the book. Mm. And his argument is that the way that we do film right now is actually in a way quite new, and that some of the potential of it we haven't really explored. And his thing is, you know, he looks at the historically at the printed book and the consequences that it had and so on, and the sort of evolution and history of it, which, you know, I don't remember because I don't hold that kind of information in my mind. But the thing that was really interesting to me was the last chapter of the book talks about the future, and he's kind of, it's a hypothetical thing because he's just, you know, imagining what it might be. But the idea being that, you know, in a way, that maybe, you know, the time of the book is gone.
Mm.
And that actually the way that we are able to express ideas using film, which, you know, contains, can contain words, can contain images, can contain audio, can contain any number of things, that actually that, one could argue, has a richer, you know, I guess, you know, to your point about storytelling and non-linear narrative, has a richer kind of potential than the printed page. And whilst I hate him for saying it, I can certainly see it.
Yeah, I wonder, sort of swinging back on this now, because I'm just thinking, I don't learn from YouTube very often. I would rather read to learn, and I think it's partly probably to do with my age and, you know, my life history and all the rest of it, but partly because you can get through things, you can skip much easier so far. I think film and video would have to be a much actually different thing for us to, you know, just if it's just click, go, watch it, you know. No, I mean, that's the thing about text, because we've got text, but you can cut up text very easily. You can take notes really quickly. Mm. You can annotate very easily a document. You can write down a notebook.
But if you think about, you know, some of these apps like TouchCast.
Yeah,
I don't use it, but yeah. I know there is that. There is Explain Everything, various other apps that are effectively, giving you the option of video, but with all sorts of added interactive things. Again, if you think of that as something that is in its early stages, but that as technology evolves, it will evolve and maybe give us a different medium. Same as the book, you know, same as, you know, how exciting they must have all been when they got the first printed thing and they, you know, they could smell the book and all that. But something that will emerge, which I think is the point, and I, you know, I don't know what that might be, but that's kind of, but that maybe we are seeing the beginnings of that. And that in terms of human cognition, it might mean that we evolve how we think and how we structure knowledge in a new, different way.
Yeah, I remember somebody saying that when TV started, people started dreaming in black and white until colour came in, and then they started breathing, you know, in colour again. David's just saying, and Viv has been saying, you know, that she prefers text to video or screencasts. But David's saying we're straying into learning styles territory, and I think I'd probably say I hope not. because
no, I was thinking more what they were saying, the evolution, that actually, you know, we adapt, we have adapted, it's clear we do, to all the different things, sometimes not in a good way, you know, some might argue, you know, most of the time not in a good way, but that's a different story probably. Yeah. but there is something about that reciprocal causation, I guess, is how I'd see it. You know, that yes, you know, we kind of create the tools, but you know, the tools in time shape how we think. And again, if it isn't intentional, it isn't deliberate. One of the things that happens is you find yourself, like the many blog posts I read these days, where people going, I can no longer concentrate and read. And I think that is something to be taken seriously.
Yeah. And I wonder as well, that and this is, I remember years and years, it's one of, you know, book I've got as a favourite book, it's a Penguin classic translation of two Chinese poets who, if you read their names, the way they're written, is Li Po and Tu Fu, and I believe it's Li Bai and Dufu or something you pronounce them. But the translation of a bunch of their poems in this Penguin Classic has got a brilliant first big chunk, fifth or quarter of the book, about the difficulties of translating and the interest in translating from Chinese to English. And it's obviously a kind of less linear language, I think, and it's much easier to rhyme. They've got a much smaller sound set, and poets will have rhymes that are in the middle of the line and things. And obviously, if you were reading that, I think laid out in Chinese text, that your eye would go through lots of different routes through the poem, perhaps, and you'd read it in a different way. And maybe it's less linear, less ordered and hierarchical than reading English. So maybe we've actually done some of this before, when they've changed. And what about, you know, if you're reading hieroglyphs? Now, how do you read those? Do you read those as, I don't know, do you read those in the same way? That are they as linear as, or are they more like a flip book, or are they more like seeing several things at once?
Yes, I guess you're looking at it from the perspective of the how do you do it, the skill, I guess, with which you may be, you know, depending on what it is, and I guess depending on the timing and so on, how you know, if you look at narrative, has changed, hasn't it? But one of the things that I think is happening is that, you know, sentences, descriptions, and anything, and I certainly see it with my students, and I find it really, really awful. They are not able to sustain reading something that, you know, they label as deep, is what they label it as, because it actually requires them to switch things off, concentrate on the sentences, and read them a few times. They can't do it.
Yeah, I suppose it's hard, and what we're used to getting pull quotes telling you what the important bit of the story is, and, you know, bits and pieces, you know, and jumping out.
And you know what they do, because a part of the thing that I get them to do is about, you know, to go read whatever thing, and then, you know, write a blog post about what it is that they've understood, and so on. So then I get them to work with each others, and so they can understand the stuff that is secondary source. But when you send them to the originals, they find it difficult. And I have to say, if I were employing these people, I wouldn't. I'm sorry, but
I hope they're not listening.
No, but, you know, hopefully by the time they finish with me, they will be able to do this thing, because that's what I teach them how to do. But at the point at which, you know, people are, you know, everybody is just so used to, you can get any concept, in 100, you know, in your 140 characters or in your this and that. Well, actually, no, you can't. Mm. Sometimes you have to struggle.
Yeah.
And it's worthwhile because actually you will learn something that, you know, might be worth. What's a great idea? What's I wasn't looking at the tweet, and then I suddenly came to the tweet. I was looking at what Viv was saying. Oh no, nothing new. I just saw a photo in on Twitter, but I, you know, I do think that there is something that certainly I notice, you know, have noticed over time, where the fact that you have access to everything quickly and in a kind of in this sand bites that are getting shorter and shorter and shorter. It does affect your staying power, your capacity to grapple with uncertainty, with the unknown, your capacity to grapple with concepts you don't understand, because they jump to it must be this way. And I do think that's a loss.
Yeah, I'm completely with you, really, but I just keep thinking maybe other things I've been keeping half an eye on. Is it Mike Caulfield?
Mm-hmm.
Who's doing stuff with a sort of...
The wikity.
Yeah, that sort of WordPress as a wiki thing that mm-hmm. basically links up lots of ideas and pulls, you know, quotes like we're saying, snippets together and links them up and all the rest of it. And it is... I guess you would need to do to use this and to use it properly. You would be doing quite a lot of sustained reading, but it's not necessarily the same kind of sustained reading as you'd be doing in a book.
But of course, I mean, there are those of us, and I would say Mike. You know, Mike is an example. John Udell, the guy who's doing the hypothesis thing, is another example. You know, there are those. There are people who understand that technology needs to do more than the 140 characters, and you know they're trying. My point is that if people lose the ability to, you know, from a cognitive point of view, mm-hmm. if they cannot focus, if they cannot attend because their attention span is zero, then no tool in the world is going to help. They're going to go back to Facebook because Facebook is going to tell them how to do it. That's the point, really. And so you offer tools like that, like the Federated Wiki, you know. Great idea. Lovely. Most people that I, you know, I've read various things, you know, people don't understand how it works. So there's the technological side of it. But also, they fail to understand conceptually and from a cognitive point of view, what's the point and why do it that way? And they do it that way is, and I think this is what Mike is trying to do, is so that people stop jumping to conclusions and making unsubstantiated assertions and engage with things in a way that doesn't make it black and white. Because most of social media doesn't do that. But if we don't know how to do that, you know, to me it's a chicken and egg, really.
Yeah. I wonder, too, then, if this sort of short-term memory thing leads to the way that people do business now, and mm-hmm. You know, in a place of work, if people are making something, there's, you know, there's so much emphasis put in planning and organization and checking. And is that a workaround for people not really knowing what they're doing? You know, that people can swap in and out of a job quite easily because they know how a process works, and they know, right, I've got to do this, this and this, and if I forget, I go back, tick it off the project plan, and the project manager will come along and make sure that all these things are done and how long it's going to take me, and, you know, mm-hmm. plan it out like that. I wonder...
It's a lovely connection, because it's like the bigger issue is fragmentation. You know, it's really what happens when, you know, and effectively most of our organizational systems are that, you know, they are fragmented. We break things up more and more and more and more, because in theory, the more you break them up and the more you can plan them and kind of, you know, count them, the more that you are able to employ people who are not so expensive. They don't need to think, they just need to push a button. Sadly, I think, you know, higher education is going that way, as well as, you know, organizations being that way. Mm. Maybe then it won't matter that they can't think, because they won't be expected to.
Well, it's the plan does the thinking for you. So you can get... okay.
You know, I'm gonna say something that probably will lose half of our million listeners, but I don't care. I'll still say it. There is this story, and I haven't followed up on the story in detail, so I can't give you names or anything. This woman, because I work for an assisted dying charity to try and get that legislation here in the UK, and so I get sent lots of articles and things about assisted dying, and there is this woman who went, you know, in Switzerland it's legal and people can go to Switzerland to you know, to end their life under certain circumstances, and this woman who said she wasn't, normally it's people who are terminally ill or who are very old, or, you know, that get to go to Switzerland and who have the money to get to go to Switzerland to be able to go, okay, I've had enough, I'm going to end this. This woman decided that and managed to convince all the powers that be that to allow her to go to Switzerland to end her life, because she said she looked at the world the way that it was, could see what technology and other, quote, advances were doing to us, and she did not want to be part of that. And sometimes, you know, when we talk about this, I keep thinking I must look at this story, look it up and find out more detail, because, you know, there is a way in which, you know, we talk about, like what you were just saying, about how business is done today, how higher education is done, and how effectively there is this way, either you play the game, you join it in some way, and start to interact with the world in this fragmented, you know, cut everything up, not necessarily give people and things time. But if you don't, you fail in it. And I just thought it was just a wonderful, you know, a wonderful idea that somebody went, you know what, sod you, I don't have to be part of this.
Yeah. That terrifies the hell out of me, Marianna, to tell the truth.
That's so funny.
The idea that somebody would, I mean, the idea that somebody would kill themselves because of, you know, that they don't like the way things go generally, basically. I mean, if you look at the whole history, it'd be pretty easy to take that slant on it. You know, I don't like the way the world's going, that hell in the handcart. You know, there's so many people done that.
My memory of the story wasn't that it was somebody who was a victim in any way, you know, somebody who, you know, basically was, you know, effectively making a rational decision that she wasn't going to be participating in this thing. And I just thought, you know, well, I just thought she was, you know, extremely brave. I thought, I must go and learn more.
She may be brave, it kind of terrifies me. I mean, I suspect it's the only game in town. You know, it may be you'll just turn the corner and everything's crap and you're, you know, everything's going in a terrible way and just in front of you, there's a crocus, you know.
But this wasn't about anything being terrible in the sense, you know, it's simply this person was observing the way society was going and said, this is not something I want to participate in.
Yeah.
And I just think, well, you know, firstly, I believe that, you know, people have the right to make those kinds of decisions, which is my own thing. But secondly, my thing was, you know, well, actually, if you're making a rational choice to do that, well, it was kind, to me, it read, and as I say, I must find the story, it read more as somebody just going, you know, I'm at, because effectively she was old, right? If she'd been 10, they wouldn't have done that. She was an old woman. And people were saying she just needed to, you know, update her knowledge and understand more about technology and understand more about this. And she said, I don't want to. So anyway, if I find it, we can put that on the show notes.
Show notes, but yeah.
We've gone really far away from our topic about...
Yeah, I don't know. So maybe that particular lady, if she'd figured Google out, it wouldn't have been so bad. And how did she get to Switzerland?
All probably should figure Google out. Exactly. Now I knew you'd make a link there, John.
So, yeah, I think that will require some thinking. So I'd be interested to read about that. Viv's saying something about, you know, isn't this just the same as any generation being confused or unsure of new technology? And that's kind of...
That's what we're saying, isn't
what,
it?
What I'm saying, and it seems a big reaction to me to do that. Anyway, you know, it's quite a big step.
It's put one of those warnings, right?
Yeah.
That the S106 radio in no way encourages...
Yeah.
To end your life. Yeah. If you haven't yet learned how to use Google, please just call
us.
Yeah,
yeah. There'll be another Daily Create along tomorrow.
Exactly.
It might be a really good one. Just hang in.
Exactly.
You might enjoy this. You also talk about this idea, and I'm just diving into the show notes to bounce along a wee bit, about relationships being linked to this sustained attention. And you said empathy requires sustained attention.
Yes, that this was a link I was making around all the stuff that there I mentioned Sherry Turkle's and her books and things, you know. So to me, it, part of what the connection I was making was, if we are not able, if our attention span is shortening, which is, there is a lot of evidence to say that it is, and a lot of what we do in social media is about, you know, again, fragmented relationships and relationships that are sort of convenient, yeah. So when it suits me, I go to Twitter, and you know, and then, but it's not. The more that happens, you know, if we are not able to, if we lose our ability to, to hold our attention, then, you know, you wonder about the implications in terms of empathy and our ability to be, to be empathetic towards others. And then, you know, the whole thing about the nature of relationships, which of course there is, you know, not just Sherry Turkle, but many other people are talking about the idea that, you know, the nature of human relationships is changing as a result of how we interact online, and whether, you know, the quote that I found from her was, you know, she talks about this idea that, you know, intimacy takes a lot of work. You can't just Google it. And the quote I found from her was, you know, human relationships are rich, they're messy and demanding. We have learned the habit of cleaning them up with technology. And the move from conversation to connection is part of this. But it's a process in which we shortchange ourselves. Worse, it seems that over time we stop caring and we forget that there is a difference. I kind of think, again, that's something, or whether, you know, I could argue against it, of course I can, but she does, you know, and others talk about this idea of, you know, the problem with technology is the habits of mind that they allow us to practice. And some of the people, like Mike, like others, who are trying to do some, you know, developing a different kind of computing that allows for a different kind of thing, there are some, I think, you know, good examples of people saying, hang on, we need to start designing platforms for a different purpose, like the Wikidata thing and various other things. But in the large scheme of things, there's not a lot, is there? Mostly everyone is on Facebook, and if you're not, you're nobody.
Yeah.
I'm nobody.
Actually, I've been on Facebook recently, the last couple of days, quite a bit, and it's because it's a good friend of mine died the other on Friday, and lots of people he knew are there in Facebook talking about him and things like that, and I think it seems it feels pretty healthy to me. Rather than And I don't know if the day-to-day thing in Facebook, because as I say, I don't usually hang about there. But it actually felt quite healthy for that to be going on. It's a bit like a wake or something like that, where people will get together and talk about somebody that's died, which I always think is, you know, it's probably a good idea. And
there is, isn't there? I mean, that's a lovely example, and I think, you know, I think we do. I think, you know, in the S106, we use Twitter in ways that, you know, I would say mostly are really positive. Mm. And then there is also the shit, and it's bad.
Yeah.
So it's both, you know, it's a both and thing. It's not something that, which is again where I say it's the, you know, a sort of reciprocal causation thing. You know, it's not the tool. It's not, I mean, I know that I like to always, you know, shout at Facebook because I don't like it. But I know people doing wonderful things there. And wonderful things that actually do not just involve people who are very, very far away, but and who would never, you know, who you can just switch off and forget if, you know, if it's convenient, but actually people who are using the technologies in order to work with local communities.
Who
meet face to face, who help old people, who walk pets, who do all of that. So, you know, there is that too. But I think the important thing is to be aware that this matters, to be aware that, you know, our attention is being pulled in directions where we're not thinking, and maybe we need to start to think a bit more about doing more of those things.
Yes, yeah,
the healthier things, I guess.
Yeah, and I think whatever, good or bad, paying attention to what's actually going on is probably, you know, a great idea, if somewhat difficult. and I think this kind of links, and we're running quite long now, Mariana, so just... Alas, this is deep in...
We're finishing on this chilly note.
Well, I'm going to say, I think...
Yes, wait to the intermission theme. Yes, definitely.
Yeah, David, I think we can in a minute. But before that, I'd just like to, because you've you talked about this contemplative computing.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a thing that you're doing at the moment, I think, that is I've certainly found really interesting, the daily stillness stuff.
Because the idea behind it, that's the still web, is the general project, and the daily stillness, the idea of it is to give people a simple daily activity that can help us kind of remember to, I guess, retrain our attention, you know, to be able to do things that maybe memorize a poem, remember to, you know, to stop and listen to some music, or, you know, do things that in some way help you regain a kind of balance between the how we rush and do more and more and more, faster, and actually sit down and, you know, read one paragraph and process it, you know. I use it like that with my students, some of the quotes and the poems that come on there, and I ask them to do close readings of it and talk about how the first time they scan it, how they miss most of it, and actually when they read it 10 times, you know, well, look, you know, it means this, it says that, and I see it differently, and I can talk about it. And so it's just simple ways in which you can change your habits of mind. So you've got more, you can be more intentional in your use of any platform, I guess.
Well,
including Facebook.
Well, I think it's not just technology, because quite often the things that you just are part of life, you know, they're real physical as well as sort of the computational or the online sort of life stuff. It seems to be useful for real life as well,
in all sorts of ways. From my perspective, because of my bias as a cognitive psychologist, there is no real difference between the two, because of course the issue isn't, you know, isn't what the technology is doing or what the world is doing. You know, you can take a walk and you know, be in the most beautiful place and not notice a bloody thing, because you're too busy thinking about any number of other things. So, you know, in that sense, the kind of strategies and what one needs to learn to be able to attend meaningfully to things. It doesn't really matter whether it's a computer, an email, whether it's Twitter, an email, or whether it's Slack, or whether it is, you know, walking in your wee, wonderful wee paths that you, you know, there are people that completely would miss that, the beauty of that. You know, you stop and take wonderful photos of it all.
And very often I wonder about not noticing things as well, because I'm thinking about something else. And what what the stillness has done is maybe it's not helped me necessarily stop that, but helped me notice it occasionally. And I think that's maybe what, if we're going to end on a sort of positive note here, is what we've got to do with all this new technology and the way you read and all the rest of it, is maybe not change it so much as notice it. If you are a scissors man, a snipping and all the rest of it, make sure you, you know, yeah, the unthinking, it's if it's not being unthinking, it's unthinking, yeah.
A lot of it is, you know, yeah. A lot of it is, the way that I explain sometimes to people is not so much that one or the other thing. You know, it's not about whether it's a good or a bad thing. It's about whether or not you have the choice to be able to go, now I am going to just be quiet inside and outside. Most of us do not have that choice. And gaining that choice requires work. And I guess that's what, you know, that's what I hope the site helps people learn.
Oh. Yeah,
it needs practice.
Yeah, and practice. Yeah, that's, we've got to do the hard work. Anyway, I think
anyway,
we should,
on that fine note.
I think that's a good note to finish. That yeah. there is some light at the end of the tunnel.
we don't have to all go and end our lives in dignitas in Switzerland.
Hopefully not. Anyway, I think what we'll do is. We'll have an intermission.
Let's have an intermission.
So, we should speak to you next week, folks.
BS106 Radio for life.
For life. Cheers. this is the bit where we don't talk.
Okay, we don't talk then. Okay.
Heard this tune so many times today, I'm beginning to like it. Of course you carry it.